never tell you. One ran away from Russia. It was during the time the Second World War. It seems that every time a new group of soldiers came into our little town, they started to loot, murder. There was no reason, they gave no reason, they just went from house to house. And we used to, until they got into our house one day. I remember they were starting to look through drawers, and then they started to grab my mother, and then my father interfered. And I started to run out of the back door to go to my grandma's. I didn't go, I ran when I heard shots in the house and shots after me. They had no idea who ran out of the house. They didn't think it was a child. And I kept running, so nothing happened to me. When I got to my grandma's house, I realized later on what had happened. My father tried to protect my mother from getting hurt, and they shot him. And during that particular week, I recall, they amputated his arm, and he was crying and walking back and forth, and he was staying at my grandma's where I ran to, and looking at the shop where he used to work. The shop was part of the house too. They made cabinets and beautiful furniture, and he was crying every time he passed the shop that he won't be able to work anymore. I don't remember how long he lived, but a very short time, I recall, after the arm was amputated, that he had passed away. And that's when we started to prepare to leave Russia after that. While some of his brothers had gone into the war, and they never came back. It was like two or three, as I recall, of his brothers, my father's brothers, that is. It was a period where we lived in our little house only short periods at a time because we were hidden in cellars most of the time. We'd go to a neighbor's cellar where everybody would get together to make the time pass. But you can hear the shooting and the screaming of people running in the streets for shelter. And I remember at one point standing on the street, my mother ran right by me, she never even saw me. And I don't recall how long it lasted, but it lasted for a while, and then it quieted down a bit, and everybody was comparing notes who was killed and who was murdered and who was left alive and who was running away. And then we started to prepare to run away, and we had, that is, Uncle Ewer had a lot of Christian friends that he used to do business with, and he got to talking to one of them that had a wagon that was big, and he promised to see us across the border. It was during the time everybody was running away, but most of them never came back, and some of them came back because they couldn't go across the border. They robbed them, and then they came back without anything. And we still took our chances of running away. And his friend, I remember, was like in the middle of the night, we all went in the wagon, and it was cold. And I don't think we ever could have made it without Uncle Yo's help. He was very young, but very, very much of the hero type. He was in the war, and he was really our hero. And he took care of every detail, and we got started on our trip. And when we got to the dangerous part of out of town, we traveled for a long time towards Czechoslovakia, or Poland, I don't recall. It was farmlands and little farmhouses. When we were finally stopped, when I say we, it was my mother, my grandmother, which was my mother's mother, and Uncle Yura, and my sisters and I. And we were stopped by big, beautiful men on big horses with rifles and bullets around their belts. And they started to pull the wagon apart, looking through it, and it looked like the driver that was driving us, that was supposed to be our friend, knew who they were. And they knew we were going to be on the way. And we were terrified because a lot of people had gotten killed taking that trip, trying to reach that destination. And the one that put up the most talking and crying and pleading was my sister Lee, who was very bright. I'm very versed in the Russian language. She spoke beautifully and she pleaded. And she won the leader of the gang over, that he took her in his arms and he calmed her down, got on his horse with the rest of them, led us to a little farmhouse that was warm and clean and comfortable. And there were Christian people who were very kind to us. And they kept us overnight. And all the time, this leader of the gang was talking to my sister. He was so attracted to Lee, her beauty and her brightness for a young child. And when finally morning came, he took us, leading our wagon across the border to another little town, to a Jewish family, and they took us to stay overnight. It seems that my grandmother, my mother, knew these people. They knew that we might need help and come to their house, and they would give us their home and food. And I remember they were very kind to us, and we slept overnight. And we continued on a journey towards Poland. And we stopped at another house that was very hospitable. And they took care of us again until we got to the major city that we were supposed to be for a while. In order to keep on traveling, we ended up in a large city of Poland. And we stayed there for a long time. Now, as I recall, the reason we were able to do all that, my aunt, Tanta Bela, and cousin Lou's mother, and Uncle Morris, they were sending money all along while we had all these problems. Somehow the money got through to us, and we were able to go across and pay our way in some places. Like when we got to Poland, we had to rent an apartment from people who had a big house, and we stayed there for a long time, maybe 6 months, until we were able to obtain certain visas to go over to Cuba from there. We couldn't go straight to America for some reason, as I recall. It'll come to me later. You had to be a citizen of Cuba in order to come to America. There was no other openings to get through. I many times think about it lately, that if it wasn't for Lee, And we had to go through all those murderers and gangsters waiting on all those roads for people to come through so they could rob them. Some of them got killed. And I often think about if it wasn't for her, we never would have made it. Come to this country at all. We were just lucky that this gangster, the main one of the gang, took such a, he was smitten with her. We never would have made it, I'm sure. We finally got from one town of Poland. We stayed there for about 6 months, and then we went to Warsaw. We had a beautiful time there. All the time my aunts and uncles were sending money to pay for all our necessities, rooms we had to rent, and food, because we left all our beautiful things back in our little house that were priceless, and we just left everything and took the things we thought we needed to come to this country. And if it wasn't for them, we wouldn't have made it either. When I say them, I mean my mother's sisters and brothers that kept sending money all the time. And we stayed in Warsaw for about 3 or 4 months, I think. All the time they were getting ready to make a trip from there to Havana, Cuba. And with the help of Uncle Yor, he was the one that ran and made all provisions for papers and stuff. I used to hear they needed certain documents to get across. And we finally got on the ship with a lot of people that we met from our town were waiting there to go to Cuba on the same boat with us. And I can recall being on the ship like 21 days, maybe more. And there was a lot of hardships for some of the older people. And they were sick and they didn't like the food. It wasn't kosher and it wasn't clean, and they all used to get sick. And Mickey Lee and I used to take care of all the people, the older people. They weren't that old. You know, when I look back now, they were just people with children probably our age that had nobody to look after them. And then we also had some great times on the ship. In spite of all the hardships, there were a lot of young boys and girls clowning around and dancing. And we sort of stuck together until we got to Cuba. And it was a beautiful landing because all the Cubans, the Jews of Havana, were waiting for us. They knew the ship was coming, like we were considered, I guess, like refugees too in those days. They brought toys and candy for all the children and took us to, and they provided to get us apartments, and they placed everybody, and there was some kind of an organization that took care of that, because our ship that came over was the first ship with Jewish people. The Cubans never even saw a Jew in their life. And we were told to say that we weren't Jewish, that we were Germans when we landed, if they ever asked us what our nationality was. But as the months went by, I think they knew what we were. And we developed some beautiful friendships with the natives and the people that we lived with, who were enormously wealthy, that rented the apartment to us. And they used to give us beautiful clothes, and they used to invite us to dinner. And only my sisters and I went. My grandmother, my mother, And Uncle Leo wouldn't dream of eating all those beautiful foods because they weren't kosher. There was no such a thing as a Jewish butcher or anything that Jewish people could eat that was kosher except fruit and vegetables and fish. And we used to make the most beautiful meals. We learned how to fry bananas and to eat fish and all the exotic vegetables and fruits that we never ate before. We got used to eating and we kept pretty healthy from all those foods except for the heat that was unbearably hot, and we weren't used to the climate. And I know I was very sick for a long time because of the heat. I used to get completely undressed during the night and lay on the tile floors. They never used rugs because the climate was too hot. But I remember everything was marble and tile. I used to lay on the floor to cool off, to fall asleep because the heat was unbearable. But I will never forget the people that we got to know, the natives of Havana, how hospitable and nice they were to our family, especially to us kids. After a while, we got used to the climate, and the people were so beautiful to us. We made wonderful friends, and then they sent my mother's sisters and brothers sent more money to move to a nicer place. We stayed in a hotel. We met wonderful people, and we used to play the piano, and there used to be entertainment there, and we had a wonderful year. My mother and Uncle Yura always managed to find ways to make money. My mother used to do sewing for an underwear company, and we used to help her. She had to go to pick up the stuff and bring it, and then she'd have to bring it back, and we used to direct her how to go there. We used to take her coming and going until after a while she got used to getting around on her own. And Uncle Yule was very ambitious for a young boy. He opened up a little store of men's accessories, ties and socks. And who assisted him as a helper? Lee, of course. She had a business head. She was smart. She picked the language up in a short time. They all thought she was a native of Cuba, the way she spoke Spanish. And he did very well. And when the year was up, we had to leave to come to America. We were all heartbroken. We really didn't want to go anywhere else. It was a beautiful year that we had living in Havana. But we had decided that the family in America was really waiting for us to come. And there was no other way but to keep on going to America like we decided originally, to be with the family. I remember we came here on a very cold December. It was the month of December. And Tanta Bela was supposed to pick us up at the place where the trains were to bring us at the station. It wasn't Ellis Island or anything like that, because we came from Cuba to America on the most beautiful train. They had dining cars. It was a beautiful trip. And when we finally got to New York, we waited for Tanta Bela, and there was some kind of a misunderstanding. She never found us. But of course, Lee was smart enough to know how to hail a cab. And we got to my aunt's house, and she finally came after a while, and she realized that she couldn't find us. She came home and we were there waiting for her. And she had a beautiful house and a beautiful store. And that's where we stay. We stay with her for a long time. Until we got settled on our own, we went to school, she got us an apartment. And that was the beginning of living in New York. I still missed the old country for a long time after we landed here. And we went to school, we made friends, but it wasn't the same because we didn't speak the language, and a lot of kids would make fun of us when we did speak with an accent. When the school presented a problem, because only for a short time anyway, kids used to make fun of us because in that area where my aunt lived, everybody was American born. There were no foreigners there. Everybody spoke a perfect English. But after a while, that came to an end too, because we tried very hard to become Americanized. You know, I just opened up a can of prune jelly, and it reminded me of something very pleasant as a young child in Kilsyllif. That's the name of the town we were born. Every year in the month of September, when the plums would be like the plum season, and there were bushels and bushels of plums in the house, with all other kinds of delicious fruits. But the prunes in September were at their best. So all the neighbors used to get together because everybody was so close together. Nobody lived so far where you couldn't walk over. They would dig a ditch in back of somebody's house and would fit maybe 6 or 8 big vats would fit into that ditch. They would light it, they would make a fire from wood, and for a long time everybody would place the vats in that ditch on the fire. And while that was going on, they would be opening up plums and take the pits out. When I think back, there must have been 10 bushels of plums that fit into one of those vats. And they would add sugar, cinnamon, and for hours everybody would sit and keep turning with wooden sticks till the plums got soft. It would take hours for it to get like jelly. The plums had dissolved and it was beautiful. There was no straining. It would just dissolve by itself from the constant cooking. And it was finished. It was like a thick paste, and they would add more nuts or sugar if necessary, and they let it cool. And then they would store it away in jars. I mean, we all did it. And I remember my grandmother and my mother, especially my grandmother, she worked very hard at it. And we had a cellar. Under the cellar was another cellar that was the coolest part of the house. And they would store them away in jars in big wooden cabinets. And there were other preserves that they used to make during the year and preserve all these delicious fruits and keep them for the winter because nothing was growing in the wintertime. And every time they'd bring up all these delicious things in the house, and we used to eat it on the most delicious black bread or holly that was all homemade. It was like you would compare our kitchen to a real bakery in this country because the oven was so huge. The oven was made of stone and brick, and it was the most delicious time of my life that I can recall, smelling and get the fumes into the bedroom from the kitchen of all the delicious things they used to bake in the middle of the night. They used to start like Thursday night making all the preparations, and during the night by Friday morning, 5 o'clock, you could smell all the delicious things they were baking. Hollies, breads, Danish, honey cake. I can almost feel the taste of all those delicious. You can't even describe the taste of what they used to do. When I say they, I mean mostly my grandmother. And my mother would help her. It used to wake us up, and we used to love to get up early in the morning and taste all the things that were coming out of the oven. Everything was baked that Friday to last until the following Friday. The breads were so huge and round, there was a special pantry of boards across, looked like a cabinet against the wall. They'd lay out the breads across those cabinets. There was no wax paper or anything that would preserve the freshness. Just laying there on those boards from 1 week to the other, nothing got stale, nothing got hard. And that would last till the following Friday. And we also had a job as children to take some of those breads and hollies every Friday. We'd go to neighbors who were very poor. They lived a little bit out of the way where we were. And we would walk to their homes. And that was our mitzvah for the week, to provide them with bread and holly. Let me tell you something about Kislev. Some of the happy times that I remember as a child, especially during the summer season, after having bad winters, which wasn't really bad, we didn't know anything better. We loved being outdoors in the winter too, playing in the snow, making sleds out of boxes, sleighing down the hills, whatever hills we were able to find. The most beautiful part was the summertime. We'd walk towards the farmlands, the outskirts of where we lived. Some were close by and some were very far out. You had to walk through the forest to get to these different farmhouses. And friends that my parents and my grandmother had that had beautiful farms with trees of all kinds of fruits that we used to pick and bring home. They'd want us to take so many beautiful fruits home, it was impossible to carry that much, because in Kislev, if you walked, there was no riding on a horse or wagons. That was only used for commercial purposes, mostly for people that had business that needed that kind of transportation. And it was mostly the farmers. We had no use for things like that. So we used to hire a wagon and horses by the day. But mostly we walked endlessly to every part of the town, and to watch the farmers display their wares and their fruits and all kinds of vegetables to the markets like 3 or 4 times a week. And we'd walk to watch them with their displays. Some displayed everything on the floor, on sheets and different cloths that they made themselves, very colorful. And some had little stands. They'd come with horses and wagons filled with delicious things from their farms. And we as children used to love to go down the market and just watch them or buy some of the things to bring home. Although our house was filled with foods and preserves and all kinds of great delicacies, always well prepared for stormy weather if you couldn't get out to shop or go to the farm to pick up certain foods for the house or walk to the butcher. So we were always well prepared and stored away. I can also remember watching my people, my mother, not so much my mother, my grandmother, make homemade salami and store it away in the cellar, and it would be ice cold and the most delicious tasting salami I could almost taste it now. And it would keep endlessly amazing. There was no refrigerators of any kind in those days, anywhere, especially in Kosilov. Those were happy days. Or visiting my grandmother from my father's mother. Walking out of our house, in back of our house, was just a short walk to my other grandma's house. And it was very thrilling for children to have so many relatives living in the same area. Uncles and aunts, my grandfather, my grandmother from my father's side, my mother's mother, who was my grandmother, that lived with us all the time, as far as I can remember, from the time we were born, she lived with my mother. Uncle Yule lived with us. Families always lived together in one house. There was no such a thing as a child or a daughter or a son getting married and moving away from the house. They always seemed to remain in the house of their parents. And the most beautiful part that I can remember of my childhood was Saturday morning. Saturday was the most precious day as far back as I can remember. Watching my father, especially, he was very beautiful, getting dressed to go to synagogue, and he would take us alone. My mother would follow later on. Sometimes you all went together. I was never bored going to synagogue. It was the most beautiful services. And I loved the synagogue. It was so pretty. It was more beautiful than any house I've ever seen. The furniture in the synagogue, everything, when I think of it, was real beautiful mahogany furniture, beautiful colored glass in the windows, and the services were always beautiful, and beautiful singing from the cantor and the rabbi, and the children and the congregation would chime in. Those were happy times. Or doing special Jewish holidays like Simchas Torah, the whole town turned out to carry around the Torahs, and they used to sing and dance, and there was celebration in everybody's home, and one would run, especially children, we'd run from one house to another. It seemed like the whole town was related to one another. Those were beautiful times that I can remember. Getting new clothes before a special holiday, or to go to the shoemaker who made our shoes by hand, and we used to watch him. We used to sit there watch him work on our shoes. The thrill of seeing your shoes finally finished, the color of the leather, the lightest, shiniest brown. And in the wintertime, we'd watch him make our boots that were warm and high, protect you from the snow when you had to walk to go to cheder. And when the snow got too bad and we couldn't get out to walk to the cheder, it was quite a distance from where we lived. They had special men, young men, who would come to your house and carry you on their back to the school. It was a way of life. Now when I look back, it sounded funny, having somebody carry you on their back all the way to school. But that's the way they lived. And it was beautiful. And it was fun. Even though we were scared to death of our rabbi that used to teach us, Hebrew and Yiddish and how to read and write. He made sure that we learn by his way of teaching. We used to bring along our lunch and spend hours there because we couldn't go home in bad weather to eat lunch. And then the same men would carry us back home, or our parents would come to take us home if the snow wasn't too deep. There was no electricity, no lights of any kind. At night, we used to see our way about from neighbor to neighbor, just from the stars, and the whiteness of the snow would lead us to where we had to walk. In real blizzards, we stayed in the house, and we would visit with other friends, or they'd come to our house. We'd make our own dolls out of cloth. We'd make all kinds of games out of paper, or we decorate our windows inside the house with cotton and shiny silver powders to make it look like snow, with little dolls displayed on the windowsills. And that's how we used to keep busy, and it was fun and creative. I'm going to tell you about our house. One side of the house was like an enclosed backyard. That's how I can describe it. It had a in that area, there was a stairs going down to one cellar where we kept all the preserves. From that cellar, there was another stairway going down to another cellar. It was even colder, where they used to preserve all the things that were perishable. The reason I'm bringing that up, it was fun for my sisters and I as children to go up and down those stairs to bring up things. It was amazingly cold down there, even in the summertime. Coming up from the same backyard, there was a stepladder leading to an attic where we kept dishes that were only used for Passover holidays. And a lot of things were stored away. It was a great place for children to play in the wintertime. We'd find old dresses that nobody wore anymore, or somebody's shoes, like my mother's. We'd get dressed up in their clothes, and we'd pretend all kinds of things that we were, like grown-ups, and we'd play all kinds of games up there. It was cozy and warm. It was one of the great pleasures, when I think back, that's laughable now, was great pleasure and fun for us children. And to look forward for the Passover holidays, we'd look over our little glasses, we call them kaiselus. Each child had a glass of their own that they used to drink wine from. It was such a great thrill to plan and count the days for Passover. That meant the beginning of spring and summer and new clothes and the seder that everybody sat around till all hours of the morning asking the four kashas, and having your grandmother and your uncles and your aunts and your mother and father. It was always a lot of family together. Besides, they used to bring home people that worked in the synagogue or came from other places that didn't have any place to go on special holidays. And each member of the synagogue would say, take somebody home with them for a Sabbath dinner or for a New Year's celebration or for Passover. There was always some strangers at our table sharing our food with us. I thought it was beautiful. Now when I look back, I think it was even more beautiful. We also kept, I just thought about it, a lot of geese and chicken in that part of the back of the side of the house that I call like a backyard. And they used to feed them and fatten them up for special holidays. They would kill some of the geese, and the shechet would come down and kill them. And we used to stand and watch. And then, after they were slaughtered or killed, whichever way you want to call it, we would be busy, especially in the wintertime. We'd gather around an enclosed fireplace in the kitchen. But the warmth from that fireplace was like on all the walls and connecting the bedrooms and the dining room. That's where the heat came from. And they also used to do cooking inside that fireplace. But on the wintry nights, we'd sit around those walls and we'd pluck the geese and the chickens, and we put them in huge bags, and then we would plug them again and put them in other bags to make down, so we'd have down pillows and down blankets. We used to call them ibbot. I can't think what we used to call those blankets. I'll think of it. I'll put it in. Because you sure needed them to cover yourself at night when you went to bed in the cold, wintry nights. Everything was made by hand. The down pillows were made by my grandmother and my mother. They had peasant girls coming in to help with the work. Did I ever tell you how we used to get our water into the house? Every house, but I particularly remember our house, what I call like a backyard. There were huge barrels, and there was a special man that would go to the well. Every neighborhood had a well in their area that they used to draw the water from. But there was a man that used to get paid just for bringing in fresh water every day, or as much as he thought you could use for a day. And those barrels used to get covered with a certain cloth, like the flies shouldn't get in. It was covered up with a cloth and a rope around it. And every time you needed fresh water, you'd go to the barrel with. And we used to draw water out with a pot that had was like a little huge ladle, and bring it into the house. Sometimes the water would be frozen on top. The first thing in the morning, you'd have to break the top of the ice to get to the water. Everything was done by hand. It was hard work, but nobody ever thought of it as hard work. It was a way of life. My grandmother was constantly in the kitchen. It was her job. She was forever cooking and baking. But I think I already told you the baking was done like once a week, and it would last a whole week till the following Friday when they started the baking again. After my father was killed, I guess there wasn't much money coming in. My mother decided to partition off part of the house, and there were several sewing machines brought in, I remember. And she had some peasant girls working for her, and some of her friends, young friends, and some of her married friends who had daughters wanted to learn the trade of sewing. They used to help my mother. And that's how she made some extra money. Some very wealthy people used to bring in material to have dresses and coats, or whatever they needed made. Everything was hand-tailored, and she was very creative. We didn't think anything of it then. It was also a way of life. When I look back, she was the greatest designer. She didn't even realize, because there were no patterns. She had to do everything out of her head. I remember she'd stay up very late into the night cutting fabrics for and drawing them out with tape measures and the chalk, and then she would cut out the material. She made the most beautiful dresses, I recall. And everything was pure silk, including our clothes. She used to make us the most beautiful clothes and underwear. We took all those things for granted. That was a way of life. We didn't know anything else. And all the material that would get left over, I used to watch my mother create all the clothes. I got very interested. Even as a little girl, I used to make the most beautiful doll clothes for Mickey. She was the youngest of the three. I also remember the beautiful times we had with our friends. We had girlfriends that we used to visit, and they used to come to visit us. And the best time, as I said before, was in the summertime, when everybody used to be outdoors playing. On Saturdays, nobody did anything. Everybody was very, very religious. Saturday was really a day for rest. We all did a lot of walking. There was a road, it was like a promenade, almost from one beginning of the town to the end. You'd walk back and forth endlessly. And everybody knew one another, and everybody was dressed in their best because it was Saturday. It was very special clothes for that day. And the other beautiful part that stands out in my mind are weddings. When there was a wedding and you were invited,